this time. For each and everyone here, bless your name. Speak through me. May I hear your voice. Be edified in the name of Yeshua. Amen. Now, sometimes people say, I prayed and God spoke to me. And other times, I prayed and my wife answered me. Really, I would give Brooke helped a lot with this, the message, especially when you're sneezing and coughing and blowing your nose all day. It's hard to think. Preparing for holidays, I mean, seriously, I cannot wait to get on this plane to go to California. I love the holidays, but as a rabbi, I'm exhausted. And I'm looking forward to sitting by a pool and going in the pool and then sitting by it more. So it's going to be great. And I'm looking forward to it. I haven't seen my family in, gosh, over a year. Some of them haven't met Big Baby. So it's going to be great. But today I'm going to talk about a battle of the wills. Battle of the wills. I'm going to read two main scriptures. And then I'm going to talk about it. And it was really, it's not completely based upon this. And this is not a partisan message, but a lot of it came about some of the Senate judiciary hearings that were on the news the other day. And again, this is not a partisan thing, but it did spur me to want to speak about that there is a battle. And I'm not putting, there's no party of God. God is not a registered Republican. He's not a registered Democrat. He's not a registered Libertarian. He's not independent. He's God, all right? He's above all that thing. Like when Joshua asked the angel of the Lord, who was, I believe is Yeshua, pre-incarnate form, he said, are you for us or are you for our enemies? And he said, no. That was his response, no. And he didn't play into the game. He said, I am who I am, and the question is not who am I for. The question is, are you for me or not? So with this going on, you can judge a tree by its fruit. Whether the Republican or Democrat, you judge a tree by its fruit. And you judge it based, you siphon things through this. Not through red or blue, donkey or elephant. You judge it through this. And you see where righteousness falls. But that there certainly is a battle of the wills, and the battle will grow stronger as we get towards the return of Yeshua. And we need to be aware of it. We don't play the same game, but we need to be smart. Yeshua said, be innocent as doves, but wise as serpents. Which is a really remarkable statement if you think about it, because it really is an allusion to the enemy in the garden. It says in the Genesis that he was more cunning than all the animals. So in a way, he's saying, know how to play the game, know what they're doing, but don't be subject to the evil by which they partake. Be wise, be crafty, understand these things. Know what their tricks are, and yet rise above it and return good for evil. It says in Romans, they heap piling flaming coals upon their head. But know that vengeance is God's. Anyway, so let's go to Ephesians 4, beginning at verse 11. I'll be reading to 16. Now, this is a familiar passage, but there's a couple of parts. There's a specific part I want to show you that'll relate to another part in Colossians. So Ephesians 4, beginning of verse 11. He himself gave some to be emissaries, some as prophets, some as proclaimers of the good news, and some as shepherds and teachers, to equip the kedoshim, the holy ones, the saints, for the work of service, for building up the body of Messiah. This will continue until we all have come to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of Ben Elohim, the Son of God, to mature adulthood, to the measure of the stature of Messiah's fullness. And this is really the key verse. As a result, we are no longer to be like children, tossed around by the waves and blown all over by every wind of teaching, by the trickery of men with cunning and deceitful scheming. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all ways into Messiah, who is the head. For from him the whole body is fitted and held together by every supporting ligament. The proper working of each individual part produces the body's growth for building itself up in love. And then skip over to Colossians 2. It's in the same neighborhood. Colossians 2, beginning of verse 6. Going to verse 10, Colossians 2, 6. Therefore, as you receive Messiah Yeshua as Lord, so continue to walk in him, rooted and built up in him, and established in your faith, just as you were taught, overflowing with thankfulness. And this is the key part. See that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the tradition of men and the basic principles of the world, rather than Messiah. For all the fullness of deity lives bodily in him. And in him, you have been filled to fullness. He is the head over every ruler and authority. So if you notice, this is this strong admonition that Shaul is giving the Ephesians and the Colossians not to be seduced, to be deceived, to be pulled away by men and other forces in this world, but rather keep our eyes focused on Messiah. And notice here, he compares, he says, don't be like children anymore. So what does that mean? We used to be like children. Now, there's a good part about being a kid, but especially in this day and age where kids are almost exalted above adults, that's wrong. I mean, really, you're going to prefer a kid and their intelligence over an adult? Yeah, I mean, notice that in even 1 Corinthians 13, the great passage on love, it says, when I was a child, I used to think like a child, I spoke like a child, I reasoned like a child, but when I grew up, I put those things away. I got smart. I enjoyed my time as a kid, and God views children as children. But when you get up, and if you're acting like a kid, you're doing something wrong. You got to start acting like an adult. You got to reason like an adult, and think like an adult, and speak like an adult. Right? When I asked my daughter, why'd you do that? I don't know. Yeah, go to the court. When you get in trouble, why did you do that? Why did you speed? I don't know. How's that going to go? Right? Or why did you do that? Because I felt like it. That's going to go well. But that's how people act today. I feel like it. Oh, help me. If I did everything I felt like, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be wearing a jacket. Well, that tank top and sandals look would probably what I'd be doing. We don't live by our feelings. We don't live like children. Right? Every morning I got to wake my second daughter up because she wants to sleep. My other daughter, however, gets up really early. She doesn't feel like getting up. So I wake her up and say, it's time for school. I mean, in reality, I'm saying, I don't care what you feel like. You got to get up and eat your breakfast and get dressed and brush your teeth and go to school. It doesn't matter what you feel. I do it tenderly, but that's essentially what I'm saying. I love you. It's time to get up. Let's go. Come on, let's have breakfast. That's what the adult does to the child. And it says that we're tossed around by water and wind. You ever seen a kid in the ocean? They have no strength to battle a wave. They get thrown around. Or when wind blows, I remember with like some big storms, my daughters were frightened. We were in New York. Wind blew, my kid was stuck. She did all that she could to stop this wind from blowing her over. It's frightening. Because kids are small and they're weak. And they get pushed around by the elements of the world, and they don't know what to do with it. They're frightened. They're immobilized almost. They start to cry. That's the image that he's bringing up. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, it's like a con artist. You know, you don't know what you're doing. I remember the first time I visited New York. Actually, I came through New York to go to school. I went to school in Philadelphia. I flew into New York. So there I am, this big, sore target. Two bags. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm in Penn Station. And this guy comes up to me. He says, hey, listen, I got to make a train. I need $5. You have $5? I said, I guess, sure. So here's what he goes. I'll come back. I promise. I'll show you that I got the ticket. I said, okay, fine. Please don't hurt me. You know, here's the $5. He runs away. And then the person behind me, I don't forget it, in front of me said, I hope you didn't give that guy $5. I said, oh, jeez. I just got scammed out of $5. I haven't been in the station for more than a few minutes. That's what it's like. Because I had no idea what I was doing. Right? And people can see that, and they took advantage of me. This is what Shaul is telling us not to do. Be mindful of the tricks that the world is going to play. It also says in 1 Corinthians 12, verse 2, that you know that when you were pagans, you were enticed by idols that cannot speak, and you got led astray. Which is really a peculiar statement. How do you get led astray by something that can't do anything? It's not like it says, go there. And you say, it told me to do it. Or follow me. It can't move. It makes me think of my daughter. They love their dolls. Particularly little babies. It's funny how little kids love babies. Right? It's like, yeah, you take care of it. I wish. But so, it's like my daughter holds her doll. I love my baby. They stroke it, and they're tender with it. They give their little fake bottle to it. You know, oh, baby, come. They want to sleep when they're in bed. I want my baby. Come sleep in my bed. You know, put the baby in the bed. I got to go, okay, now I can sleep now. Put the little cap on. It doesn't, you know, the fact is, though, it doesn't matter how well they treat that baby. It's nothing. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't receive love, and it doesn't give love back. And then as long as they do it, they can do it for the rest of their lives, but that thing will not change. And they've deceived themselves. I mean, I'm thinking of a strong, analogy, I guess metaphor. But listen to the point. Nothing will change about it. They may even deceive themselves thinking that this is a real baby and they really love it and that it needs them. But it doesn't. It doesn't matter what their intentions are because it's not real. It will never grow up. It will never say mama. It won't do anything. And they can actually develop a relationship in their minds thinking that I've actually have this wonderful relationship with this baby, but they've deceived themselves. They've been led astray. Guess what? Adults do this all the time. They pour their hearts and their lives and their devotion into something that gives nothing back and that actually can't even receive anything and that actually does nothing for them. And they've deceived themselves. They've been led astray by an inanimate object. Or an inanimate thing. You know, it reminds me of when the young ruler comes up to Yeshua and says, good teacher, what must I do to receive eternal life? He says, why do you call me good? Only God is good. If you look around, nothing out here is good without God. Nothing is good. If God is not in it, it's nothing. It will pass. It will disintegrate. It will go back to the dust. And eventually it'll be burned. That's it. It's gone. Boom. It's nothing. There's nothing left. A lot of people today are growing up and they're trying to find their own path. They're trying to find some sort of meaning in life. And they have tons of avenues and methods by which they can do so. They want philosophies or diets, exercise plans, life coaches, bloggers, seminars, online groups, and even books. And I share this from experience with somebody who told this. You can read about books, about which drugs to take, how they'll open up your mind to experience new things. So you can even find ways on how to, you know, what illegal drugs you can take to expand your mind. Now, some of these things that people say may contain some truth. Hear me, please. Some people may say some true things. I mean, if somebody says love, like the Beatles said, love is all you need, it's right, but not the kind of love that they're preaching. You see what I'm saying? Like, they may have elements of truth, but we have to be wise and discern exactly the totality of what they're saying. Really, they're addressing, as Paul writes to the Colossians, that these are basic principles, base elements of the world. There are foundational things in this world that are good. But again, if they pull us aside and they don't point us towards God, then we're being deceived. And notice the juxtaposition here is that it's either to the principles of this world or it's to the Messiah. There are no other choices. It says in Ecclesiastes 3:11 that God has placed eternity in our hearts. But so that we can't even know a thing that God has done from the beginning to the end. Basically, he's given us, there's this tug on us that wants us to know more, to seek meaning, to seek direction, to seek life. The totality of it we can't comprehend, at least not in this world. We'll get it, I think, at least a lot more when Yeshua returns. We won't see through the glass dimly. But people want something more than themselves. They want to invest. I mean, how many people are investing now in movements and causes and protests and groups, Facebook groups? I mean, you name it, you could do anything. If you want to give your time and your life, you can find something with which you can do something. I don't know what, but you could do something and feel like you're part of something greater. I mean, Jewish people are great at this. We invented everything. I mean, you want to find a movement? Some Jewish person was part of founding it. Because we're always trying to find something that gives us meaning and purpose. And some of it may be based on truth. They want justice. They want righteousness. And that's good. But if it's not from the throne of God, it's not. Remember, Saul had mercy on King Agag, the king of the Amalekites. But he was wrong because he didn't obey God. Well, I'm being merciful. Isn't that what you want? Aren't you merciful? Yeah, but I told you to wipe him out. The judgment has come upon this man. He's been merciful enough. So he took a principle of God and perverted it to actually being disobedient to God. Please hear what I'm saying. We have to be wise and to think just because something is godly doesn't mean it's what God wants us to do. As Yeshua said, even on the cross, he said, I could call down legions of angels right now if I wanted to, but it would have been disobedient to the Father. The world is going to try to, remember, the enemy is not just going to say, there's no God. He sometimes does that. But most of the times, the enemy perverts things. He twists things. I mean, if the image of a snake, think of a snake, right? Slithering, sliding, twisting, turning. He twists things around. He didn't say, Eve, eat the fruit. It's really good. He questions it. Did he really say that? Look, all he's saying is he doesn't want to be, you can be just like him. It's not really a big deal. He's twisting things. He's conning her. He's trying to pervert things so that makes you think and you're deceived. We have to be wise. You know, people are looking for something, and include they go to far mysterious places. Israelis love to travel, especially they go to South America, they go to India. They want to find something mysterious, something that they don't know, something that might give them hope, answers. It could be through drugs, could be through other religions, could be through an experience. Oh, the experience of a lifetime. Well, guess what? You still got to go back to work the next day. I mean, experiences last. They're great, but they're not life. People love self-help books, getting motivated, getting pumped up. But as Einstein said, you know, the thinking that produced the problem is not sufficient to solve it. So how can we, which are broken or deceive ourselves, fix ourselves? You know what I mean? People think almost that our thoughts are our salvation. If I just change my thinking, my life will be great. Now, this, again, let's think about it. There's truth in that. We have to take every thought captive to the obedience of Messiah, it says in 2 Corinthians 10. But notice, what's it predicated on is that it's subject to Messiah. It's not subject, I worship you, positive thinking. Heal me, save me, positive thinking. Our thinking's transformed when our minds are subject to Messiah. So yes, we should have positive thoughts. As Paul writes in Philippians 4, we should think about whatever is true, pure, lovely, praiseworthy. Those are good. But it's all predicated that the lordship of Messiah, that he's the head. So even though they have personal, great, wonderful thoughts, it's not enough. Even my grandmother, I remember she used to say, reading the news is so depressing. I said, so why do you do it? She said, almost this sense of trembling because I have to be informed. In a way, she worshipped. She had to be educated. She came from old school. We're like, education is power. Education is good. Again, let's take the truth. Education is good. We should be aware. We should know. We should learn. Faith does not mean being dumb. A lot of people who have faith are very smart people. Don't ever be deceived by people who think, oh, I have intelligence and you have faith. That's the baloney. A lot of smart people believe in God and trust in Yeshua. And just because someone has a PhD doesn't necessarily make them smart. That means they fulfill the requirement. But as Josh said, it takes a lot more faith to believe that God doesn't exist. So talk about faith. I mean, I'd rather believe that I was a product of intelligent design rather than some super cosmic accident. You tell me that doesn't take faith? And of course, there's always success, the people looking for salvation and meaning and success. People want to get to the top, but it doesn't always necessarily satisfy. Or for how long? People want something. They're looking for something. They're searching for something. But let us notice they want to be filled up with something. That means there's an emptiness, and they need to fill it. And I think today that so much in the spirit of the world, because God is not even a choice, that people get angry. This world is more and more filled with anger. People are angry at getting to the point of violence. I mean, whatever your stance is politically, the fact is, when they posted on the internet the addresses and contact information of some of the senators, they're doing it to incite protests at their house and to threaten them. That's not right. I don't care what your views are. You don't threaten somebody just because they disagree with you. But the fact is that people are justifying their anger because they're worshiping an ideology. And we have to, as believers in God and followers of Yeshua, we have to say that we can disagree with somebody, but our response is not to get violent, but to love them. And we may be subject to some of this violence. Because we can't fight that same battle. We can't fight the way they fight. But this is the way things are going. Because the Austin things are also getting angry because they're taking the place of God. And they're thinking that you do not subject yourself to me. You are not walking in the way which I've commanded you to walk. This is how people are talking, essentially. You are not speaking the way I commanded you to speak. Therefore, you must be punished. It's scary. It's frightening. I don't even like saying it, but this is how people are being deceived by the enemy. That God doesn't exist, so they're going to take the place of God. But God doesn't even talk like this. God has way more mercy than that. Let's go to the first solution. Let's look back at Colossians 2:9. And notice that it says, "For all the fullness of deity lives bodily in him, and in him you have been filled to fullness. He is the head over every ruler and authority." And why does this make this statement, "For all the fullness of deity lives bodily in him"? Notice that in verse 8 it says, "Not to be taken captive through philosophy and empty deception." See this juxtaposition. There's empty deception. Come on, everything's great over here. It's really good. What you're looking for is over here, and then you get nothing. But then you look in Yeshua and he says, the fullness of God lives in him. There's two points. One, the meaning and purpose of life and everything that we're looking for is in him. And two, that it's in bodily form so that it's accessible. He's come to us. So much of people want is self-help, but you have to do these things and do these things. What he's saying is just receive me. Touch me. Let me touch you. And you will be healed. You'll get all that you're looking for. When you find me, you see the Father. What you're looking for is, you know, as the disciple said, if we see the Father, it'll be enough for us. He says, you do see the Father. You see what you're looking for in me. And the second part of the statement, and in him you have been filled to fullness. We are not.